I suppose the first thing you could say about my own mother, the one thing that would be beyond any dispute whatsoever, is that she's old and useless. She's in a Florida nursing home and has been for a while now. She was born in 1930, which means she turned 90 just a couple months ago. And whatever contributions she'd be making to society probably came to an end certainly 20 years ago, if not maybe a little bit sooner. She's not only old and useless and not only doesn't contribute anything to the economy or to the general welfare, she is in fact a drain on resources. She requires constant care. She's been suffering from Alzheimer's and dementia for 20 years on and off. I think any reasonable look at a ledger sheet would show that my mom went from black ink to red ink as far as the state is concerned quite a while ago, and certainly there's no reason to continue to make expenditures on that kind of a drain. In an era of budget cuts and so on, where healthcare is rationed and everybody's in line for the COVID vaccine, you could certainly, without argument, say that she should be at the bottom of the list. And while she is old and useless today, I might point out in her defense that she wasn't always that way. Not only did she raise a family and work in a healthcare clinic and bring a lot of health to a lot of people, I think probably her most amazing years were back before she met my dad. She was one of the very first stewardesses. That term is considered to be sexist today, but she was very proud of it. She's been a British subject all her life. She remains to this day a green card resident alien. But she's paid her share of taxes, but I think probably the most important thing that she probably did during her entire life was back when she was a stewardess, before they became flight attendants, and she was working for BOAC, British Overseas Airways Corporation. For a while there, my mother was the featured hostess on a tour around London in her BOAC stewardess outfit, and they had an American stew do a tour of New York City, Pan Am stewardess. And back in those days, they would run the tour of London on both BOAC and Pan Am flights going to London, and they'd run the Pan Am tour of New York on both BOAC and Pan Am flights going from London to New York. So it was a different era. My mom was a stewardess on an airplane called the Stratocruiser, and it was one of the last of the prop-driven airliners before the jets came along with the 707 and so on. And you may not know this, but jet engine essentially has one moving part, realistically, one moving part, just a turbine that spins. The old piston engine airplanes had thousands of moving parts per engine, so they were not quite so reliable. And on one particular flight on the North Atlantic Trace, they were not too far from where the Titanic went down. It turned out it was Christmas Eve. And the flight that my mother was on, the BOAC flight, was heading towards London, and they lost an engine. You have four engines, slowed them down a bit. And then they lost a second engine, and then they lost a third engine. Now, that airplane could not maintain altitude on one engine, so as this airplane began its slow descent into the frozen North Atlantic, the flight crew started issuing instructions for evacuating the airplane. Not only are you going to have to put it down in the middle of the North Atlantic in rough seas at nighttime, but that water is about as cold as it was for the people who went into the water on the Titanic. And when my mother tells me this story, she talks about the fact that she had a number of unattended kids on board, and she gave them a notebook and told them that everything that happens from this point is very, very important, gave her her watch as well, and told this little girl that that from this point forward, anytime the captain said anything on the radio, she should make a note at the time and write down exactly what he said, which was a pretty good way of keeping their minds off of what was happening while she and the rest of the flight attendants got together and prepared a ditch in the ocean. And she tells me this story with utter calm and without any bravado whatsoever. And the only time she gets emotional telling this story, by the way, is when she talks about the fact that as they realized they were in real trouble, the pilot of the BOAC aircraft sent out a distress signal. And something like 20 minutes further ahead on one of these North Atlantic Airways was a Pan Am flight, propeller-driven airplane too, heading to London. And when she talks about this experience, she gets tears in her eyes every time she talks about the fact that that Pan Am airplane turned around and came back and basically circled the BOAC plane as it was heading down into the ocean. You could see it off the wing. And the pilot of the BOAC plane said, "We've got friends out there. They're keeping an eye on us. They know where we are." And that's how it looked like it was going to go. And to be perfectly honest with you, it looked pretty much like there wasn't going to be any BillWhittle.com if the situation had continued in that fashion, but it didn't. They managed to restart one of the engines at about 800 feet above the water, which is 80 stories. That's pretty low. And with two engines, they were barely able to claw for altitude, diverted to Gander in Greenland, landed. And my mom was utterly amazed to discover a lot of press people there. And she was even more amazed to discover that she'd become a bit of a celebrity because there was a great deal of debate about whether or not women could perform this function on an airliner, whether or not women would be able to perform in emergencies when the first female flight attendants came on board airplanes and stewards were joined by stewardesses. A serious concern about whether they'd be able to handle it or whether they'd become hysteric and become more of a problem than they were. But it turns out that was not the case. And my mom was kind of the poster child for that particular aspect. But that was quite a long time ago. And so whatever contributions to society she may have made, I think you could probably say were safely 50 years in the past. I bring all this up only to say that if my mom had been living in New York rather than in Florida, and we used to live in New York for a while, and the governor of her state had been Andrew Cuomo instead of Ron DeSantis, there's an extremely good chance that my mom would have been dead by now, because Andrew Cuomo forced nursing homes to accept COVID-19 positive patients back at the nursing home at the most vulnerable places in the country. He forced COVID positive people back to the nursing homes. And the official estimates are somewhere around 12,000 people died as a result of this political decision. And it's worth mentioning that for this policy, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was awarded an international Emmy for his, quote, masterful handling of the COVID-19 briefings. And there's the world of 2021 for you in a nutshell. The governor of New York, who's arbitrary and cruel decision costs the lives of 12,000 old and useless people. And he was given an Emmy. And what better award than an Emmy? What better award for a Democrat to receive than an Emmy? His performance on television was exemplary. You see, not like Orange Man with his wacky theories about hydroxychloroquine and racing to get vaccines and all the rest of it. No, his on-camera presence was absolutely superb. And the fact that he may have killed thousands and thousands of old and useless people certainly pales into comparison when you take into account how good he looked on television. Ron DeSantis, on the other hand, of course, is weathering a firestorm of criticism from people like legislators and teachers who feel that they should be first in line to get Donald Trump's vaccines. And my point of all this is really just a simple one. I told you my mom's true tales of adventure, but that was all a lie. Those things really happened, don't get me wrong. Those things actually happened exactly the way I described them. When I say they're a lie, though, what I mean is the idea that you have to justify somebody's life, that what they have done is a measure of what they're worth, is a pretty repugnant way of going through life, isn't it? Turns out my mother did heroic things when she was younger, but that has no bearing on her value as a human being. She's just another one of the old and useless people in Florida nursing homes that are going to have a chance to live a little while longer as a result of the compassionate decisions made by this Republican governor, instead of being consigned to a pretty likely death in the hands of a loving and generous and telegenic Democratic governor. It doesn't matter what she did. Doesn't matter that she had kids. Doesn't matter if she paid taxes or not. It doesn't matter at all. She could have been a person who was lonely her entire life, been alone her entire life. All of that wouldn't have mattered because in a society that's worth living in, a person's life has value because it's a person. Every logical, reasonable analysis of the situation comes to the same conclusion, and that is, why would you spend a precious resource on old and useless people? Well, two things, really. First of all, if this disease were killing young people at the same rate it was killing old people, then I think you'd have a case. But it's not, and it never has been. It never has been. The mortality rate among 20, 30-year-olds is 0.0001%, something like that. Children under the age of 10, I think there, you could count the number of fatalities in, you know, on one hand. So this is a virus that attacks old people, and when the Florida governor decides he's going to protect the most vulnerable people first, I like that. I don't care what his politics are, but I'm also not surprised about his politics. I like that. And the second thing that I think is a factor in all of this is, if there were a limited number of vaccines, if there were 100 million vaccines, then, again, conceivably, you might want to get into this kind of a discussion, but there aren't. Because of the incredible power of American science and American industry, and most especially through the extraordinary efforts of cutting through red tape and concentrating on curing this disease that had been undertaken by the previous president, who was thrown out of office because of his disastrous handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. That's not really an issue. Vaccines are coming off the line all the time. And when teachers say that they need to be prioritized, and yet they refuse to go back into schools, when teachers' unions say to Democratic politicians, we should get the vaccine first, we're maybe 20, 30 years old, 40 years old, we should get it first, and furthermore, we're not going to go back to school and teach until everybody's had the vaccine. We'll send non-unionized assistants to the schools that can kind of proctor the lessons while we stay safely at home, fully vaccinated. The COVID-19 pandemic has been as clear an example of the utter dysfunctionality of the government, the utter lack of trust and well-earned lack of trust in public health officials, the perfect example of the fallacy of thinking that one expert is going to be completely apolitical and should be listened to regardless of any other consequences. And finally, it's been a great example of the inability, the willing inability, of our political class to look at what is factually happening in the world and in the country with regard to who's getting this disease, who's dying from this disease, and whether or not the cure is turning out to be worse than the illness. I don't want to live in a world that thinks of any human being as old and useless. And if we ever catch ourselves making determinations based on that metric, then it's time to either change the government or change your address. I am very proud of the governor of Florida. I'm very, very, very proud of him, and I'm proud to know that at least some people in this country still understand that all of society is a mutual trust arrangement. It's a network of trust. It's a web of belief in our fellow people. And in a world that looks like it's getting increasingly darker in terms of the moral landscape, as we seem to be descending closer and closer to those frozen North Atlantic waters with engines failing and nothing apparently that we can seem to be doing about it. It's nice to know that every now and then there's a politician like Ron DeSantis who's out there off our wing, flying around, circling with us, and making sure that the people who are going down don't feel like they're alone, and don't feel like they've been abandoned, and don't feel like they're without hope, and don't feel like they'll be lost without a trace.